This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
Stay a while. This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff coming to you from the Frenex Studios here on Long Island. Surprisingly, the other two cohorts on the show, Dan, Third Mike Dan and Steve, both had prior commitments again, so they are out this week. It's been a while since we've actually had not only the three of us on the show, but the three of us in the same studio here at the show. I don't know why the hell that's happening, but it is. So we will get their picks for Pigskin Pick'em later on, we hope. And this is one episode of the show, Jeff, I would have really loved to have gotten Danny's opinion here for the show. We'll get into playoff baseball later on. But the reason I would have loved Danny's opinion is because that was a complete, I don't know if you saw the play or not, and you can get on mic and talk anytime you feel like, but it was a complete, and I know I'm going to have to make you work on this, but I don't care at the moment. It was a complete, total, and utter bullshit.
You just
call
made the list!
At the end of Jets pads, it cost the Jets a touchdown. It should have been a tie game on the play with Austin Seferian Jenkins in the fourth quarter. But was it? No. The refs overturned the call. It was ruled a fumble, a touchback, Patriots football. The Pats went down and scored again, and New England walked away with a 24-17 victory. Now, normally, when the Jets lose to the Patriots, I usually chalk it up to the fact that the Jets were just beaten by a better team. I've gotten used to it at this point because the Jets, well, flat out suck for the most part when they play the Patriots. But in this case, I will give credit where it's due. Josh McCown actually played a good football game. His final stat line was 31 of 47, 354 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 picks. Which kind of hurt the Jets' chances anyway. Hell, they had a 14-0 lead and blew it in the football game, which doesn't surprise me because from where I sit, I can't speak for most Jets fans when I say this. It's just, this is the way I'm wired because I've been so used to losing all these years as a sports fan between the Mets, the Jets, and the Islanders. I'm just used to the horrid, torrid crap known as the New York teams that I root for. I'm used to it, that's it. You know, I kind of expected the Jets to lose, but I did not expect them to lose like this. It was a BS call, and the ruling on the Seferian Jenkins play was unbelievable. According to a story, and I believe it's the New York Post, Tony Coretti, the referee, said this, and I quote, "He lost the ball. It came out of his control as he was almost to the ground. Now he regressed the ball, and by rule, he now has to complete the process of a recovery, which means he has to survive the ground again. So in recovering it, he recovered, hit his knee, started to roll, and the ball came out a second time. So the ball started to move in his hands this way. He's now out of bounds in the end zone, which now created a touchback. So he didn't survive the recovery, didn't survive the ground during the recovery, which is what happened here." Unquote. Which to me is a bullshit.
You just made the list!
And to be completely honest with you, this is the second time a major play and a major ruling by the NFL has cost a team a game. It happened with Dez Bryant in the playoffs against the Packers. Packers-Cowboys a couple of years ago, I think it was the second round. This call, I think it was too finite a definition of the rules, honestly. He had control of it. He rolled out of bounds, still had the ball in his possession. It was maybe half a second where he lost the football, and it had to go to super slow-mo replay from what I saw, and the refs overturned the call, which I thought was complete crap. Granted, it wasn't as bad as the Monday night mess-up with the fail Mary between Seattle and Green Bay with the replacement refs, but still, it was probably the most egregious call I've ever seen in a Jets-Pats game. It was ridiculous.
You also forgot about Megatron, but okay.
Yeah, there was a Megatron catch, too. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, the whole replay issue is insane when replay is really supposed to be defining the egregious calls to get them right.
And that wasn't an egregious call to me. What, did you see the play?
Yeah. I don't want to go into it because you basically took everything that you said, what I wanted to say.
Right.
And yeah, it's ridiculous. But again, you know, I'm glad that the running back, Safarian Jenkins, decided to, you know, also own up to it, said, I got to do better, you know, covering the ball and running a better way so something like that doesn't happen.
Again.
So, you know, props to him and not doing, like, the whole blame calling and all that fun stuff that people like to do.
I give the tight end full credit for being able to take responsibility for not hanging. Okay. He's the tight end.
Yep,
I give him full marks for not being able to, you know, for being able to say, hey, look, it was my fault. I should have held the ball better. I give him full credit for that.
But, yeah, but still, it is kind of ridiculous. And can't blame the refs because, again, the refs called it a touchdown.
Yeah.
It was the people who looked at it.
In New York.
Yep. So, I know, right? In New York, actually screwing over New York team.
But the surprising thing, though, is in the couple of days since the game has happened, I've listened to I've heard Bob Wischusen and Marty Lyons with the Jets radio call. I've also heard the Patriots radio call as well. More often than not, the Patriots radio guys are going to support their team, which is what home team broadcasters usually do. But in this instance, they actually agreed with what most Jet fans were thinking, and that the call was wrong. It should have been a tie game.
Yeah, the call was mishandled and botched, and you can't do anything about it now.
Yeah, well, there is.
It's also like what I also heard is, why does it have to be a touchback? That if that happened on the 1 yard line, that's just a fumble and a fumble recovery.
Yeah, it was a fumble stuff. Recovery,
and the Jets would have the ball. But since it happened a touchdown, the other team gets the football.
I don't think it was a touchdown. I think it was because the ball was fumbled out of the end zone.
No. But still, like since it was in the end zone, I'm saying.
Well, no, it's automatically ruled a touchback.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be a touchback? Why does it have to go to the opponent?
Because it's a turnover.
But how is it a turnover when it's not a turnover when it's
the ball,
when it's in the field, when it's not in the end zone? If it's on the 1 yard line, then it's basically not. It doesn't go.
But that's because it's the end zone. It's fumbled out. It's fumbled completely out of play. It's like the kickoff going out of the end zone.
But why does it have to go to the other team?
Why does it have to go? It's a turnover.
Why is it a turnover?
That I don't know. That I can't explain.
See, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, why does it have to be a turnover? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know it is. It's completely nuts. And
I mean, just that rule alone that if that happens in the end zone, it goes directly to the other team. Why not just have like a penalty where you have to, like, instead of like first and 10, it's like first and 20 or something like that.
And again, I know Danny would hate it if me mixing in sports here, but it's kind of apropos at this point. There's a new rule in the NHL now. Hear me out. And it has to do with challenging of offsides calls. If you get the offsides call wrong, it's a delay of game penalty.
Is
it costs
just
you
offsides,
minutes.
Or is it just any challenge?
It's challenges. Sorry, you're right. It's any challenge in the NHL now is going to cost you a 2 minute penalty if the challenge is wrong.
Yeah, that's also bull.
Yeah, I mean, but playing this now to the NFL, you could think of it like this. Now, granted, it was an official review with what happened with the Jets touchdown because the Patriots didn't challenge it. They would have left it as okay, it's a touchdown. The Jets make the extra point. We're tied. We go to, you know. We play on, it's a tie football game. But if, let's say, somebody like that challenges, it should be a penalty. That's the argument I'm not trying to make for challenges in the NFL. But anyway, as far as this is concerned, bad call. And it seems almost typical. It seemed like that's just the way, because it's the Patriots and because they are the face of the league right now, because they've been dominating everybody the last like decade or so.
And I like to hear that, find that if someone says it's a conspiracy theory against the Jets, and it's like, you know, the Patriots don't really like Goodell now after all, the whole Deflategate. That's just ridiculous on its own part.
That
someone will claim, oh, they're just trying to go back in bed with the Patriots because Goodell wants to make up for Deflategate and yada, 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 yada. I mean,
I think that was too literal. Literal interpretation of the rules.
I mean, like, it's getting, like, too convoluted, the interpretation of the rules. Like, the whole Dez Bryant and Megatron catch is like, everyone knew from the eye that that's a catch.
Right.
And just because it's not technically by the book of the whole, oh, he has to be positioned, he has to be a runner, oh, he has to be a receiver, definition of that, it's like, just stop with it. You know he got the basics down.
But
of
all,
it.
Again, all scoring plays in the NFL now, no matter what.
I'm talking about like, even those weren't like, I think one of them wasn't a scoring play, but still, just the whole
Dez wasn't. The Dez catch wasn't, but Megatron's was.
Yeah, so, but everyone knew that was a catch.
Right.
The that should be like, if it matches the eye test first, then it should count.
Yeah.
I don't know, but simplify the rules. That's all.
Because if it looked like a touchdown, but on the replay you realize, oh, he never had full control of the ball and it's obvious, then okay, reverse the call. But it didn't look that obvious. You had to slow it down to almost frame by frame to look at it to see if he had full
control.
What
I should say. Well, if you have to take a super slow frame by frame, then it's not
that obvious, and there shouldn't be.
Yeah.
There's not enough evidence to overturn the call.
Yeah. If they say if you have to do super frame by frame by frame, then it's not good enough evidence. It should not. The rule should stand.
There's one other thing that ticked me off about this game. Yes, McCown had a good day, but he threw two picks late, including one that sealed the victory for the Patriots. And from what I saw, the Jets took their foot off the gas pedal. They had a 14-0 lead in this football game. After touchdown catches by Seferian Jenkins in the first, which was set up by a fantastic play by Jeremy Curley, Curley caught another touchdown pass later in the ball game to give the Jets the 14-0 lead. And it almost seemed like after that second touchdown when the Jets went up by two scores, it seemed like it was punt, 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 interception, punt, fumble.
But it also could be, you know, Patriots, you know, making changes on the fly.
They did. I'm not taking anything away from the
Pats. Well, you are, because you made it seem like that the Jets, you know, were this team that was winning and then taking the foot off the pedal. It's like, well,
maybe. To a degree, it kind of did.
Well, you got to give credit to the Patriots. Don't say that it was a bad thing by the Jets. The Jets couldn't stop all the changes that the Patriots made.
The Jets couldn't adapt, and that falls on the coaching staff.
Yeah, but still, you know, instead of this horrible call, just talk about how good the game was and how
it was a very entertaining football game.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets were that competitive against the Super Bowl champions.
With a 38-year-old quarterback who's barely won squat in his career, it's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Especially because let's face facts. There was nobody, not even me, had the Jets predicted to be 3-3 after week 6. I had them if they were lucky to be 2-4. They're playing Miami this week. They're finishing up that series. They've already beaten the Dolphins once. And I'll get into this a little later on when we actually pick our football games. But which Dolphins team is going to show up? Is it going to be the same team that we saw play the Jets a couple of weeks ago when the Jets finally got off the schneid and got their win in week 3? Or is it going to be the Dolphins team that showed up last week and got a huge win thanks to 130 rushing yards from Jay Ajayi? Which team's going to show up? We'll find out on Sunday.
That's the thing. You don't know which team is going to show up at which game at this season.
Yeah, and not only that, but you had a Giants team who started the year 0-5 for only the fourth time in franchise history, where they've lost the first 5 games of the season. Now, all of a sudden, they pull their heads out of their rear ends and actually show up against Denver and pull out a 23-10 win.
That's crazy on its own part.
I know. And it's also nuts.
Like how we're talking about how their defense, Denver's defense, was amazing and how they, you know, stopped all these great teams before them this season in the running game. And, oh, look what happened now. Somehow the Giants, you know, did pretty well with running the football in this game. And they apparently overlooked the Giants overall.
You had a monster game from Arlen's Darkwell, the fourth-year running back. He had 21 carries for 117 yards. Eli was all right. He went 11-19 for 128 and a touchdown. Trevor Siemian had himself a big day for Denver. He went 29 of 50 for 376, a touchdown, and even more critically, two picks, one of which was returned for a pick six. So the Giants' defense showed up, and the biggest thing that had me worried about the two biggest things that had me worried about this game were, one, is there even a remote semblance of something resembling a running game for Big Blow?
And which was answered yes.
Yep. And two, can the Giants offense survive without their two biggest weapons in the receiving game, who are done for the year with fractured ankles, and Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall? To a degree, it's a yes, because Evan Engram stepped up in this football game. He finished with 5 catches for 82 yards, including a touchdown.
And McAdoo also wasn't the one making the play calls,
which I think now may be a huge difference. Because
maybe they're also simplifying it, as you know, because they don't have Odell Beckham. They don't have the whole give me the ball, Odell type of thing going on. So like they had to change up completely.
Spread the love around a little bit more, and you might have a little more success. Who knows? But the Giants finally get off the schneid. Now, it is entirely possible. It's a long shot at that, but there is still a chance that the Giants can make the playoffs at 11-5. They'd have to, of course, win their next 10 games, which isn't entirely impossible, but based on some of the opponents I've seen for the Giants and we've talked about on this show, I don't know. It doesn't look too good, though, if the Giants really want to be able to have a shot at making the playoffs the rest of the way. I mean, they can do it, but They still got to go. They still got one more with Dallas. I think they play the division once each, right? The three teams that are left? Mm-hmm. Think so?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
All right, I'm double checking that now myself. I know I do this all the time.
Yeah, so the Giants in the let me see, division are 0-2, so they have to play Washington twice.
Twice. Yeah, they still have Seattle to deal with. They play them this week.
Yeah, but we're talking about division right now.
Yeah.
So don't even think about
it.
I said don't even think about it.
November 23rd and December 31st against Washington.
Who cares?
You said division. That's what I'm looking at.
But we already established that they have to play Washington twice.
And then December 10th and 17th, Dallas and Philly back-to-back.
Yes.
So is it possible? Yes. Is it a long shot? Absolutely. I don't think the Giants
are possible. Anything's possible!
Very true, Kevin Garnett. Anything is possible, but it just doesn't look too good. That's all I'm saying. I have more faith in... Honestly, I think the Giants have a better shot at getting a top five pick than they do making the playoffs.
But it's possible.
Very true, it is.
Kevin Garnett say that.
Yeah, it is. But I will say, there is one thing that is a definite fact that is impossible for the rest of the year.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yep, there is no way that Aaron Rodgers is going to be taking a snap in the NFL this season. Why? Broken collarbone in his throwing shoulder.
Yeah, by a crazy...
It was an awkward-looking hit.
Yeah.
He did. He just kind of like...
That's a better word. I don't want to say crazy, but it was
an
awkward.
It was definitely an awkward... The hit itself wasn't that awkward. It was just the landing was awkward. Because he got sacked, and he put down his throwing shoulder, his throwing arm first, which is a bad idea. But he ended up jamming his shoulder, snapped his collarbone, and he's done for the rest of the season. You haven't broken any bones, have you?
Nope.
All right. Unfortunately, I have. I've broken both of my collarbones. It's not fun.
Yeah, and this is not the first time as well for Rodgers. So.
Right. It's the same shoulder, wasn't it?
Probably.
Right.
Just to base off memory, it's probably.
Same. All right. So if you want to talk about getting hit with bad luck, not only for Rodgers, but for the NFL. Because if you look at the last couple of weeks, three of their biggest individual stars, and what I mean by individual stars is, you see these guys on all kinds of television commercials for different products, like State Farm, Head & Shoulders, Verizon, Gatorade, Brandon Marshall, J.J. Watt, and Aaron Rodgers, all hurt, and all done for the year.
Odell Beckham.
Yeah, Odell's out with the ankle injury. He's done for the year. Mm-hmm. Achilles tendon injury, done for the year, J.J. Watt. And now just established collarbone injury, done for the year, Aaron Rodgers. So it's almost as if the NFL, no pun intended, can't buy a break with their big stars. They're trying to sell the game. They're trying to get positives back into the sport after, quite honestly, all the negative crap that's gone on around the NFL the last couple seasons. And then something like this happens. Plus, it couldn't have come at a worse time for the league because you're also dealing with the injunctions and what have you over the suspension of Ezekiel Elliott, which still hasn't kicked in yet.
Why? Why is that?
There's a stay of execution. Oh, I don't know if stay of execution is the right phrase, but a suspension is being held for one more week. The NFL's trying to get paperwork sorted out with the courts.
Paperwork, great.
Yeah, so Ezekiel Elliott's going to play this week against the 49ers. Theoretically, if the NFL had just stood its ground and said, no, screw you, you're suspended, I don't care what you do, his suspension would have been up this upcoming week. This past Sunday would have been the last day of the suspension. Zeke would have played. I don't know. I think this upcoming game, since this would have been game 6 against the 49ers coming up on Sunday.
Well, this is week 7. Oh, because he would have played the first week anyways.
Well, no, he wouldn't have played week 1 and Dallas already had
their
bye week.
Yeah, this is week 7, so this would be...
No, Dallas would have already had their bye week. He should have sat out week 1.
That's right.
And Dallas already had their bye week.
I know the Dallas schedule.
Right. No, don't worry. Don't worry. Bye week schedule throws everybody off.
Yep.
So, yeah, Zeke would have missed one more game against San Francisco on Sunday, and then he would have been back the rest of the way. And the Cowboys just would have gone about business as usual and probably would have been in strong contention with Philly, which is a big surprise that the Eagles are sitting atop the NFC East.
Yeah, but Dallas right now is in third with a 2-3 record
behind Washington and and Philadelphia.
Yep.
That's even more of a surprise that I just said the Philadelphia Eagles are in first place.
Yeah, I know. They're the sound team, while every team in the East that has hype is just...
Exactly. And that's putting it nicely. We're trying to PG the show here. So...
Down the drain.
Well, pretty much. The Jets finally hit back to reality. They're back in last place again at 3-3.
Yeah, but they're 3-3.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's not like they're last place with 1-5.
Or 0-6. Thankfully, they're not the Browns. They're not the 49ers. Thank God. But it's not, I mean, come on. It's not like the Jets were really going to have a shot at the number one overall pick anyway, because the Browns and Niners suck worse than the Jets do.
And the Browns and Niners, I mean, everyone thought the Jets were going to be even worse than they were. But, I mean, like, they're a surprisingly good team.
They're a decent team, because...
I mean, yes, they have been playing teams that aren't at the highest caliber, but they're showing that they can compete hard.
Exactly. I mean, hell, all three of us on the show who made picks last week for the Jet game thought it was going to be a blowout, because we thought the Patriots were going to come into town, kick the ever-loving crap out of the Jets, and move on and leave a pile of rubble sitting at midfield at MetLife Stadium that used to be the New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't happen. And I got to admit, as badly as I wanted the Jets to get a top five pick, and there's still the potential that that could happen this
year. Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of season to be played.
Exactly.
And they could just be like... Oh.
So the Jets could still completely bomb out and get a top five pick. But with what I've seen from the Jets through the first six games, I got to admit, they're impressing the hell out of me, and they're showing a lot more fight than I would have ever given them credit for, especially the offense. Because I never expected Josh McCown to be playing like this.
Yes, but anyways...
So, we've got all kinds of messed up stuff going on.
Yeah, anything else? Any other NFL notes you want to get to?
Aside from Zeke Elliott's suspension, which we already touched on?
Yeah, I mean, like, any other crazy moments that happened? I mean, I know we don't have any undefeated team this season anymore.
Yep, that happened with Kansas City losing last week.
Yes.
Detroit got blown out by New Orleans. New Orleans put up 52 points on them.
It's amazing how much parity is going on in the NFL. There is no super dominant established team right now.
And usually you'll get that through...
No, I mean, like, you would see, like, one super dominant team. I mean, like, right now you still got to think that Kansas City is that dominant team. Let's just see how they rebound in their next game.
I mean, yeah, Kansas City is 5-1, and they play the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, they're
5-1.
Yeah, but... So, like, they still have a chance to, you know... show themselves, but it's like they lost. Like, who did they lose to on last week?
Kansas City.
Yeah.
Was it
Miami? Or
nah? Who the hell did Casey? Yeah. No, Atlanta lost to Miami.
Yeah. Okay. So that's Atlanta. Like, we thought they were gonna have a great season, and
Kansas City lost to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh lost to Jacksonville horribly.
Yep.
And Jacksonville lost to the Jets.
Yeah. So who the hell knows? Honestly, I mean, there's a couple of teams, as I said, you expect it to be bad. And, you know, San Francisco, Cleveland, the Jets, blah, blah, blah. There's a couple of teams you expected to be able to run away with certain things. To a degree, I had Dallas running away with it. I thought Oakland was going to be better than they are. I thought Arizona was going to be better than they are. I thought New England was going to be better than they are. And they're average. I thought Kansas City was going to crush almost everybody, maybe lose three games all year. They're still at 5-1, and I thought Atlanta might be the dominant team in the NFC, but they've been average this year. I will say this much, though. It's certainly making networks like NFL Red Zone a lot more intriguing to watch every week, because you never know what the hell's
going
to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and also with these injuries, all these superstar talents just going down, so now other teams have a chance. The only thing that's been showing here consistently are the horrible teams.
Exactly, and Dallas' bye week was this week.
Okay,
they just
cool.
came off their bye week going to San Francisco.
Cool.
So, two teams on the bye week real quick for week 7 are Detroit and Houston.
Cool.
So, yeah, and speaking of stuff going mumbo-jumbo all over the place, how about the American League Championship Series?
I know, right?
Starts out with 2-1 wins by the Houston Astros, and the New York Yankees bats were as cold as ice, no pun intended for the song, which is a damn good song, by the way.
Whatever.
But... the Yankees bats couldn't do anything right. They had 13 strikeouts in Game 2 against Verlander, and Verlander went the distance. And it took Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve in both games to give Houston the victories. Then we come back to Yankee Stadium, and with the way Game 3 started, I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, this could be a rout, and this series could be over quicker than I thought. But the Yankees bats come alive late in the game. They tie it, pull out the victory late in the ballgame with 4 runs in the 8th inning. Come over the win to draw back into the series. Then, all of a sudden, they decide to step their game up again and even the series after a huge night from Aaron Judge, and Aaron Judge has turned it around. So they come away with...
You know, as the postseason goes on, Judge cannot be silenced for the entire postseason.
No. You had the 3-run home run from Todd Frazier in Game 3. You had Judge combining a 3-run homer that provided most of the offense in the 8-1 win in Game 3. Game 4 was the comeback, and it took help from another Aaron Judge home run late in the game, and a big outing from from Sonny Gray, who went five scoreless innings. And then tonight, so we're tied 2-2, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, maybe, you know, which Houston team's going to show up, and which Dallas Keuchel are we going to get? Are we going to get a dominant Dallas Keuchel, or are we going to get an average one? We got an average one as the Yankees walked away with a 5-0 victory tonight. I don't know what it is, but it always seemed like, and you noticed it in the divisional round two against Cleveland. As soon as the series shifted from either Minute Maid Park in Houston or Jacobs Field in Cleveland back to the Bronx, the Yankees bats all of a sudden decided to finally wake up, and they've showed up over the last, they showed up in the last three games against Cleveland, and they've shown up so far in the last three games now against Houston. The big question is, when they go back to Houston Friday night, are the Yankees bats actually going to go back with them like they did against Cleveland in Game 5 of the divisional round? Or are the Yankees bats going to disappear again and they're going to turn into the strikeout machines?
We'll see what happens when they face off against Justin Verlander again.
And he's going to face Luis Severino, and that's a question mark with Severino too, because Severino's coming off getting drilled in his pitching hand by a line drive in Game 3. So you got that you got to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But what the biggest surprise for me, though, has been Aaron Judge and the fact that Judge has magically decided to now find his bat again. Going into tonight's action, going into Game 5 of the series, Judge had been hitting, what was it, 308 for the series, 6 strikeouts, 5 RBIs, 2 home runs, going 4 for 13 at the plate in the first 4 games of the series. So that's telling me that, all right, it's nice to know that he's cut down on the strikeout numbers, and it's nice to know that he's been able to deliver a big home run at a big moment. Because the first home run he's hit, 4 home runs now in the playoffs, if you include the wild card game. By the time he hit the home run in the wild card game, it was already out of reach. He's already hit 3 home runs in one in the division round and 2 more in the league championship series. He's finally found his stroke, and you're expecting this from a guy who'd been in contention along with Jose Altuve, the Astros, for MVP most of the regular season. And oh, by the way, Altuve's batting average for the American League Championship Series, 400 going into tonight. So now again, I know the baseball writers don't put any merit on postseason performance for MVP of the regular season, but since that's been the hot topic of discussion since the series started, for your money, who's MVP in the American League, Altuve or Judge, and why?
You said this includes the postseason?
No. Regular season only. Who would you have picked of those two guys, Altuve and Judge, who's more deserving of MVP in the American League, and why? Well, how much? The better question before I get to that is, how much baseball have you watched this year? Honestly.
I'm going to say Judge.
Okay.
Just because of how much more impact he's had all of a sudden coming up and just turning this franchise around just by his power display and his ability to just carry the team when he needs to.
All right. Yeah, the argument I'm going to make, though, is it's a hell of a lot closer than I would have expected at the start of the year. If Judge is one, Altuve's got to be 1A at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
For MVP. Because if you take both guys out of their respective lineups, just purely looking at it, I agree with you. I think Judge will probably win MVP in the American League. And we will, once they announce the award winners at the end of the World Series in November, we will let you know who won what on the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. And we will try to talk about it here on the show. But the only reason I'm giving it to Judge over Altuve is because, and this is not taking anything away from the year Jose Altuve has had, he's been phenomenal for the Astros this year. He's the leading hitter in the American League, both in terms of batting average and hits.
I just think Judge just bursted onto the scene.
And not only that, but Judge was the only guy to hit more than 40 home runs for the Yankees, and he was the only Yankee hitter to drive in over 100 runs. So if you take Judge out of the Yankee lineup, do I think the Yankees are a wild card team? Hell no.
Not at all.
If you take out
we thought Houston was going to be a very good playoff team to begin with.
Even without Altuve in the lineup, I still would have had the Astros, if not winning the West, at least being in solid contention for the wild card. I had the Yankees at the start of the year finishing 500. When the season started, I had them finishing the year 81-81, and in third place. No, I had them finishing fourth in the AL East behind Baltimore, Toronto, and the Red Sox. Which shows how off I was on my predictions for this year because I got every division winner right. It's just the rest of the leagues looking back at it from another blog article I wrote earlier in the year. Looking back at it because I made predictions for where every team's going to finish in every division. I completely screwed the pooch with everybody else behind the division winners.
Oh, well.
But that goes to show the beauty of baseball, though, and how things can be changed.
Well, that's with everything with sports.
Exactly. And speaking of things that can be changed in an instant, how about the play of Justin Turner? He's finally got playing time for the Dodgers, and he's starting to produce.
Oh, like he's done for the Dodgers for all this time he's been a Dodger.
Exactly. And that's the one thing he never had with the Mets, though.
Yeah, right?
Because David Wright wasn't going to get out of the way at third base. And not that there's anything wrong with that. David Wright's the franchise. He was the cornerstone for the Mets, and there's no way you were going to replace David Wright with Justin Turner. Turner's now getting playing time, and he's run with it. He's had himself a pretty good series so far in the NLCS between the Cubs and the Dodgers.
Especially being the second player, Dodger player to hit a walk-off home run.
Yep, he did that. Yeah, the last guy to do it was Kirk Gibson, yeah.
Yep.
Turner hit it in game two. Chicago had a 1-0 lead on an Addison Reed home run that he hit in the fifth. The Dodgers tied it on an RBI single. No, it was an RBI single by Turner, and then Addison Russell homered to tie it at one. We kept everything quiet until Turner hit the walk-off home run. The last Dodger walk-off home run was Gibson's home run in the 88 series, exactly 29 years to the day prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes to show the beauty of symmetry and how things just magically happen in October.
Yep.
Turner's got that. And then, yeah, you got Kyle Schwarber homering for the Cubs in Game 3, but you, Darvish, outpitched Kyle Hendricks. I mean, yeah, Darvish gave up the home run in the first, but he went 6 3rd innings and struck out 7, and Andre Etier was actually impactful because it was also surprisingly Etier's first start of the playoffs, or at least of the series. And look at some of the numbers for the Dodgers, though. All right, the four leading hitters in the NLCS out of 10 eligible hitters, the top four as far as batting average are concerned, Yasiel Puig's hitting over 400. You got Corey Taylor, the left fielder, is hitting 330. Turner's hitting 273 in the series. And then Cody Bellinger's hitting 250. Then you got Chris Bryant at 250. And surprisingly, Anthony Rizzo, one hit in the entire series. One! And this is a guy who, I'd go so far as to say he's been the MVP leader for the Cubs this year. Would I say he's National League leader for MVP? Probably not. I'd throw Justin Turner into that argument for the NL. But with how good Turner's been in the playoffs so far, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins an MVP somewhere along the line. Because I know they do MVPs for each individual series. Wouldn't put it past me at all if Turner wins it for the NLCS.
It depends how he produces the rest of the way. You can't do it on just on one moment.
I know, but he hit close to 600 in the divisional round, and the Dodgers win there over the Diamondbacks. Granted, it was a three game sweep, but still, and he's hitting 333 now in the first three games against the Cubs. So the fact, and this, that's what makes this even more surprising coming out of Los Angeles, is because the Dodgers, ever since their last World Series appearance in '88, have been perennial choke artists come playoff time. They're now starting to show a little traction and a little bit of footing and taking it to a team who, yes, has made it to three straight now NLCSs, but the only one of the three where they actually looked like they were a dominant team, and this is the Cubs I'm speaking of, was last year. Because okay. They got completely schooled by the Mets in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Dominated last year, and now they're getting their rear ends handed to them in the first three games. The Cubs better wake up and find their bats again. Otherwise, they're going to be done after tonight.
You think that's it? They're going to be done?
Well, again, it depends on who or what shows up for Chicago. If the Cubs' offense actually shows up and plays the way they're supposed to, then, yeah, they might be able to force a Game 5 back, you know, at Wrigley Field. If not...
No, Game 5 is still at...
Yeah, Game 5 is going to be at Wrigley. Game 6 and 7 go back to Chavez.
For some reason, I thought it was the other way around. Okay.
Yeah, they go back to Chavez Ravine. The Dodgers had the better record than the Cubs. Dodgers had the best record in baseball.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
So now, and speaking of which, there is a proposal floating around.
Yeah, so you're telling me about this, and I told you to stop because you really ruined a nice, awesome reaction from me.
Yeah, I know. But there could be potential. Now, it hasn't been set in stone yet. There's rumor mill circulating like crazy that there's not only going to be expansion, but realignment, shrinking of schedule, and lengthening of postseason in Major League Baseball as early as 2020.
Why would you lengthen the postseason?
I don't know, but the rumor is that Major League Baseball is considering expanding into two markets.
Yes, you told me about that.
Portland, Oregon, and Montreal.
Why Portland?
I don't know. Why Portland? I don't know. Montreal, they had a good thing going with the Expos.
Yeah. No, I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah, but
I thought that would have been relocation, honestly.
Yeah, I know. If anything, but complete re-expansion, I don't know. But supposedly,
you think the talent pool in the minor league is so big that you had to expand, I don't know.
That I don't know. But according to one report I'm reading through Baseball America, is that if this happens, that there could be... Now, let's say that this goes through and we expand into Montreal and Portland. What baseball is thinking of doing is, one proposal is to geographically restructure into four divisions.
Now, this is where he had me because I thought it was going to be, you know, still America League and National League.
They're going to completely scrap that and it's going to be...
Which is like, why?
I don't know. But according to one proposal, it's going to be geographically restructuring into four divisions, which would create a major reduction in travel, particularly teams on the East and West Coast, and add to natural rivalries by not just having them as interleague attractions, but rather as part of regular divisional battles. That's according to one proposal. So consider 418.
So that means the whole playoff structure is going to be completely different.
Changed, right. So according to this one proposal through Baseball America, there's going to be 4 8-team divisions, and if you include Portland and Montreal, the divisional breakdown will look like this. The East Division is going to be Atlanta, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Miami, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, and Washington. That's the East.
Wait, there's no Mets?
I'm getting to that. The North Division.
North?
The North Division is going to be Boston, Cleveland, Detroit, Minnesota, Montreal, Toronto, and both New York franchises, the Mets and the Yankees. The Midwest region.
So basically, you're just ripping the Mets out of the
old East division, right?
Yeah.
The Midwest division is going to be the Cubs, White Sox, Rockies, Astros, Royals, Brewers, Cardinals, and the Texas Rangers. And the West, finally.
Yeah, I was about to say, where's the Rangers in all that one?
Yeah, the West is Anaheim, Arizona, Los Angeles, the Dodgers, Oakland, Portland, San Diego, San Francisco, and Seattle. And part of the realignment is going to be a 156-game schedule that would include 24 total games against the eight teams in each division. It's going to be 24 total games against the eight teams in each of the other three divisions.
Okay, so
three
it's
games in each opponent.
That makes no sense. So out of the 156
games.
156, only 28 of them are going to be divisional games?
It's 12 games, 6 home and 6 road against each of the 7 divisional opponents.
Okay, so you made it sound like it was completely different.
And then three at home and 3 on the road against everybody else.
Okay.
And then as far as the playoffs are going to be concerned, it's the 4 winners of each division are going to advance to the championship series. They're basically getting rid of... Oh, hold on. They're now going to have 4 winners of the wild card games that would advance to a divisional series, which featured a wild card
champion. No, so hold on. So you're going to have divisional winners.
Yep.
And then you're going to have the wild card
game. Yeah. The winners of the 4 wild card... There's going to be 4 wild card games now. They can advance to the divisional series, which will feature a wild card team against each division winner. So you're going to have... I think it's going to be like top four whatever teams get in. You have 2 wild card games.
No, that doesn't make sense.
I know.
No, because how do you have... you're going to have a play-in game for the wild cards? You're making sense here.
You're going to have... it's going to be 4 first place teams that are automatically in.
Yes.
You have play-in games with the 8 remaining teams with the best records. I know.
It's 7 remaining teams.
Yeah. It's ass backwards, really. But you're going to have it go to a division round where it's the 4 division winners against the 4 wild card teams. And then out of that, they move on to the... It's basically going to be the way it's kind of structured now, which is completely stupid.
Yeah, that...
So you're going to have 4 division winners and 4 playing games for the 4 one-game wild cards.
So basically the top 3 teams in each division are going to be in the playoffs, quote-unquote.
Potentially. Well, you could have the top 2 teams from each division get in. The 4 division winners are set.
Yeah.
And you have one wild card winner. You could have, let's say for argument's sake.
Okay, wait. So you're going to have four. You're going to have eight wild cards.
No, you're going to have four wild cards, four division winners, apparently.
No, that doesn't make sense because then there's going to be six teams then.
Yeah, it's two separate wild card games.
You're making no sense.
Neither is this ruling.
No, Matt, you're making no sense here. I'm trying
to figure this out myself.
I'm telling you right now, you're going to have four divisional winners. So that means that's four of them. And then the way that you had with four wild cards, that's going to be two play-in games, which means there's going to be six teams left.
There's going to be play-in games against the eight remaining teams with the best records.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. All right. After the division winner. So that means that there's four games with... So that means you're basically going to have...
And it says the winners of the four wild card games will advance to the division series, which would feature a wild card team against the division champions.
So you're going to have 12 teams in the playoffs.
And then those four winners will advance to the league championship series, and then the winners of that play in the World Series. That's according to this thing with baseball America. It's confusing as all hell right now.
Yeah, because there's no American League and no National League.
No, it's just four division winners get in, and then it's the next, like, eight teams with the best records.
They have to rename all this stuff then.
Yeah, of course they're going to have to.
Because it can't be the league championship series because there's no league. Exactly. There's no American League, National League.
It's just going to be the MLB division around the MLB championship series.
But why is it the divisional round when it's just that, like, because all divisional teams are just...
It's confusing as hell.
Because they're all facing the divisional winners? I guess that's why it's a divisional round?
Probably.
It's called the World Series semis. I don't know.
It's called the quarters, the semis, and then the World Series. Instead of divisional round and league championship series.
You might as well just call it the World Series quarters, the World Series semis, and the World Series.
The World Quarterfinals, the World Semifinals, World Series.
Yeah, that's probably...
That's probably what makes the most sense, but then again... this is all speculation and rumor mill. Nothing's going to actually happen until probably within the next year or two. Because they want to try to have expansion set, according to what I've been reading today, by 2020.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just still like think that it just makes sense to have the American League and have the National
League.
Keep
it the way it is. I like it the way it is.
Because I don't know. It feels like that's the way baseball has been for 100 years. I know, it's like, it's all deep-rooted in history, but, you know, it kind of makes sense to have.
It does. But then again, I think a lot of the reason why people are complaining about
it... But it's like, you know, the NFL has like four teams and eight divisions. Why not do that?
Yeah, it's true, but it's also split up. It's four teams and four divisions each.
Which
would make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So do like an NL East, an NL Midwest, an NL North, and an NL West.
Do something like that at least.
It would make sense. Kind of keep the divisions the way they are, except split the Central up and move a couple teams out of each division and slide them into another division in each league, and you're set.
Because at least it's not too egregious of a move.
No, but again, I think a lot of the reason why I think they're trying to change it up is because some fans, and this to a degree I agree with, have been complaining that there's too much interleague play, which is taking away from a lot of old rivalries.
Well, that's the thing. If you have 32 teams, then it's gonna be 16 even. Then you could do the divisions of four.
Yeah,
and yeah, there you go. Or you can just have like eight divisions, where instead you have like, you know, you have like eight and eight and eight and eight.
Or change, which is what they used to do.
But American League, National League, American League, National League.
Yeah. Or why not just do this? Keep like interstate rivalries, like Houston. Well,
like, you know, you just have an Eastern division and a Western division.
Which is what they did for the longest time before they split up into the Central.
Just go back to that. Eastern division, Western division. Done.
Exactly. And then you cut down, like, as far as interleague play, are you a fan of it? Yes or no?
I mean, you could still have at least...
No, I'm asking you. Are you a fan of interleague play?
It's whatever now. It's not special.
Exactly. So what I think should be done with, like, interleague play is keep it at, like, close... rivalries, like, for example, Washington, the Nats and the Orioles, Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, Angels.
Yeah, it's not going to make money anymore. Like Mets versus Chicago White Sox?
No one cares about that. Exactly. You and I were at Mets White Sox last year.
That's why I brought it up.
Yeah. And it was just like, it's cool to see the White Sox, but...
Is it really? It's just another team now.
Yeah, I know, pretty much. I mean, I'd rather see, like, Mets Cubs more often. I'd rather see Mets Cardinals more often. I'd rather see Mets Dodgers more often.
Yeah, just do it like, you know, with
do the way they used to do it.
Yeah, well, no. What they did back then also is happening now. It's just, you know, not Forget what I was saying, because it's not what they did back then. Because right. now it's like, you know, because back then it was 30 teams with 15 teams. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Different.
Back then it was just two. Yeah. It was four divisions, two leagues.
No. I'm talking about interleague. The way they did interleague back, you know, before they had 15 teams on each. You know.
Yeah. So they balanced it out. It was just you play your interstate rival if you had that, and then it's
I mean they play the interstate rival, and then they played whatever division.
Yeah. So it'd be like interstate rival and like East versus West, and they left it at that.
Yeah.
And that was it. So now that we get, if anything major happens, we'll let you know. But for now, let's close out the show the way we always do. Let's pick football games. This is Sully and Steve on Sports.
Pigskin Pick'em. Turn down for what?
All right, so here we go. Week 6 provided another cluster crazy show of football.
That's putting it nicely.
That is putting it nicely. And here's how it all went down for this past week. You're going to start off with the first game down the schedule, which was Chicago and Baltimore. And Chicago in the Trubisky era gets their first win. And Matt was the only one that picked Chicago, so he automatically gets the win there. But the score was 17-24 Bears. Now, the second game was Minnesota hosting Green Bay. Everyone thought Green Bay was going to win. Everyone thought that Aaron Rodgers was not going to break his collarbone. After that happened, it was all Minnesota. Minnesota won 23-10, and no host got the win there. Now we move on to Pat's Jets. We know how all that went. Matt was the closest without going over. The differential was 7, and Matt was, again, I said, the closest by him picking 14. So he gets the win. 2 wins for Matt. Now we move on to the Rams at Jacksonville. Both Matt and Dan picked Jacksonville. But the point differential, I should say, was 10 points. Both Dan and Matt were over. Dan picked 3. Matt picked 7. Matt was the closest of the two from the point differential. So he wins there. So Matt gets 3 wins. And we move on to the 5th game, where everyone picked Oakland, but Oakland laid an egg. Not a literal egg, because they weren't shut out, but they lost to the Chargers 17-16, and no one won there. So we go to the last game, where everyone picked Denver over New York Giants, and the Giants beat Denver, so no one of our hosts won that one either. So that means Matt got 3 wins, Steve and Dan got none. So Matt wins week 6.
They really went 0 for 6 on their picks. Wow.
Well, in terms of winning predictions.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So here are your weekly standings. Because Steve and Dan both tied in second, they both get that second place point. So Steve still stays ahead of Matt by 1 point. Matt, you have 8, moving up from 5 to 8. Steve, once again, leads it by 9. And Dan is trailing the whole thing by 5. Back 3 points. So here we go. Moving on to week 7. I got the predictions from both hosts.
So they both did answer you.
Yep.
Cool.
And here we go. We're going to start off with the New York teams, as always, with Miami hosting the Jets.
All right. Miami and the Jets.
Do you want me to do theirs first?
Yeah, please.
So we have Steve and Dan both predicting Miami is going to win this one. But their point differentials are different. Steve picks 6, while Dan picks 10.
All right, and again, this all for me comes based on which Miami team is actually going to show up in this football game, the one that showed up last week in Miami's win, or the one that showed up in week 3 against the Jets. I'm sticking with Miami because I think the Jets might show up a little deflated on Sunday based on what happened last week against the Pats. They will put up a fight, but it's not going to end very well. Miami gets the win by a field goal. Yeah, I'm going to keep it relatively close. Dolphins get the win, but they take it by 3. So, Jeff, with that being said, next game.
Turn down for what?
And now here comes the other New York team, the Giants. After their win in Denver, head back home, and they host Seattle. Now, our other two have picked opposite ends.
Okay.
With Steve going with Giants by 9, while Dan picks Seattle by a field goal.
So he's got Giants by 9 and Seattle by 3. All right. Well, again, It depends on which Giants team's going to show up. They actually brought a little more life against Denver. But because I think Seattle's got a better defense, I don't think... And as good as Trevor Siemian played last week for Denver, he got picked off twice, one of which led to a pick six. I don't think Russell Wilson's going to make those kind of mistakes again. I'm taking Seattle because I think the Seahawks are the better overall team right now than Denver, at least the way they played. Denver's been too Jekyll and Hyde of a football team.
Even though they're facing the Giants?
Yeah. Seattle gets the win. Seattle wins it by a touchdown. Jeff, next game.
7 points, right?
7 points, yes.
You got, yeah, confirm that with me.
Yeah, Seattle by seven. Next
okay.
game.
Okay.
Turn down for what?
So now the randomizer rears its head once again, and we're going to start off with the first game it selected. Now, this team is making another return from last week.
Okay.
And it is the Jacksonville Jaguars at Indianapolis.
All right. So let's go. Let's keep that rolling. Let's go with the other hosts first.
All right. So the other hosts, they went both with the same team and the same score or point differential.
All right.
And that is a 14-point differential by Jacksonville.
All right.
Of all teams.
All right. I can kind of see their argument, too, because, I mean, don't get me wrong. T.Y. Hilton's kept Indianapolis in a lot of games this year. He has. And the Colts have been able to do it. They've been able to float around averageness without Andrew Luck and with Jacoby Brissett at starting quarterback. And Jacksonville's dominated a lot of teams this year. And rightfully so, especially with the powerful running of Leonard Fournette. And Bortles Mania has been doing his thing.
Which is up being subpar.
Yeah.
At times.
True, but more often than not, it's been Jacksonville getting the win. And they're going to do that again this week. We're going to stick with Jacksonville. However, score is going to be different. I'm going to give Indianapolis and T.Y. Hilton specifically a little more of a shot in this game. Jacksonville wins it by 10. Jeff, next game.
Turn down for what?
So here we go to the next game with an Aaron Rodgers-less Green Bay team hosting the Saints. Now the hosts here, the other two, have done it again.
Same team, same score?
Same team, same score, and it isn't Green Bay. They both picked the Saints by 10. Matt, what do you have to say with this game?
Well, considering the fact that the Packers are done for the year without Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not sure who they've announced yet for the starting quarterback, at least not as of now when we're recording the show, as to who's going to start on Sunday against New Orleans. Plus, New Orleans just hung up 52 points last week in a win. I'm sticking with the Saints, but I'm going to up the score a little bit. I'll go Saints by 14. Jeff, next game.
Turn down for what?
And now we're going to have a very, very bad game on our hands with this next one by the Pigskin Pick'em Randomizer. It is going to be the return of Dan's favorite second team.
Oh, no.
The Cleveland Browns.
Oh.
As the Dog Pound hosts Tennessee Titans.
Ah, we had to get... So Danny's two favorite non-Patriots teams are in Pigskin this week.
Yep.
Great. So who do the other two have?
Finally, we don't have a same team, same score scenario with the two hosts. As Steve goes with Tennessee and picks them to win by 12, while Dan goes with his guns and goes with the Browns, and goes with a field goal.
And Danny will once again be proven wrong. Titans get the win. Titans win it by 10. Mariota has himself a pretty good day. So does Derrick Henry out of the running game. Sorry, Danny, but the Browns are going to move to 0-7. And by the way, you will be paying up on this bet before the year's out. I'll give him time to pay up on the Jets-Browns bet. Danny, you have until New Year's Eve to pay me up. End of the regular season.
What happens if he doesn't?
Then he's gonna do it. Then he's gonna double it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was that confirmed?
Not yet, but it's going confirmed? To be.
Well, it has to be.
I know. Tennessee by 10. Jeff, next game.
Turn down for what?
Final game up by the randomizer. The Chargers return again.
All right.
In their home game, where probably it's gonna be filled with Denver fans.
As they're going to deal with the Broncos. Oh,
yes.
Boy. All right, other two hosts. I'm having fun with them going first.
All right, so they done the same team, but not the same score.
Thankfully.
Do you want to take a guess what team they picked? Yeah, you'd be crazy if they both picked the Chargers.
Right.
So they both picked Denver. Steve goes with a more realistic 8 points. And Dan thinks it's going to be a wider margin with 17.
Oh, I'm not going that high. I agree it's going to be Denver. It's going to be a clean sweep as far as the team is concerned. But as far as the score is concerned, I'm not going nearly as astronomical as Danny. I'll do something
lower. Are you going to go lower than Steve? Or no, somewhere in the middle?
More in the middle. I'm going 10 points. 10 points for Denver. Again, the Chargers are going to make it look like somewhat of a fair fight. But Denver is still Denver. And they're gonna come out steaming mad after what happened last week. And being the first team this year to lose to the New York Football Giants. It's not going to end well. It's not going to end well for the Chargers because Denver's going to be mad. Broncos win it by 10. Jeff, shut it down.
Turn down for what?
So now I'm looking at TV and I'm seeing that Mike McCarthy, the coach of the Green Bay Packers, is saying that the hit on Aaron Rodgers was an illegal act.
No, it was not an illegal act, Mike McCarthy. I understand where you're coming from and that you're upset that your starting quarterback is out hurt. I would be too in this situation. However, I saw the hit on replay numerous times. It was not an illegal hit. It was just Aaron Rodgers went down.
No,
wrong.
No, not an illegal hit, but an illegal act.
No, how is it an illegal act?
Because it was after the throw. Like, you see there, like, he threw and then he just ransacked Rodgers.
Yeah, so he's claiming that it should have been a penalty for hitting after the whistle or hitting after the throw.
Yes, but Barr right there just tackling him after he's thrown and just really just wants to, like, oh, yeah. No, I've been talking about the hit, like, ooh. But it's probably not as worse as what happened to the Celtics, though.
No, you want to explain that?
No, I think if you know what I'm talking about.
Gordon Hayward.
Just say that.
Gordon Hayward, that's all you got to know.
If you saw the replay of Gordon Hayward.
I didn't see it as it happened. I saw the replay. Oh, God.
Yeah, I saw the replay, too. Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of nasty stuff watching
just
sports.
Think Paul. Well, it was Paul George before that, right?
Yeah.
Yep, just think Paul George.
Yeah. Let's put it that way. And trust me, you and I have seen a lot of nasty stuff watching sports over the 20-something years.
Yeah, when I saw Hayward in that replay land.
Oh, yeah.
You saw like, that leg.
I saw the picture of what his leg looked like. I didn't actually watch the replay.
No, you watched the replay.
I did tonight. I saw the replay tonight while we were getting ready for the show. It was at the end of the Yankee game. We left the TV on here in the studio, and they showed a replay of what happened.
We still have the TV on.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was, ooh.
That was nasty.
Yeah, that's...
And not in a good way.
That's done for the season. It was like a broken ankle.
Broken ankle, broken tibia. He basically screwed up every like major bone in his leg down below his kneecap between his leg and his foot.
Yeah, without the bone going through the skin.
Ah!
I think that's what happened to Paul George, though.
It was.
Oh, God. Just imagine seeing your bone. That's making me... Oh, queasy.
Yeah. We've already made Jeff freak out on the show for the first time all year. I think that's saying something.
No.
Over an injury,
at least. You didn't do it. Paul George made me queasy.
Yeah, that's true.
Not you.
I know.
What are you talking about?
It's the first time that an athlete has made Jeff queasy on this show in a long time.
What? Why does it have to be such a monumental thing?
I don't know. It just was. So on that note, we have run out of time for this episode of the show. I'd like to remind you once again that you can follow us on various forms of social media, facebook.com/SallySteveOnSports, Twitter at @S_S_sports, use the hashtag SallySteve, either way works. On both the Facebook and Twitter pages, you can get all your updates on the sports world, get all your updates on this very show, and since we are an interactive program, let us, ask us questions. We'll be happy to answer them each and every week. We got the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. All the latest episodes are up on iTunes. Everything else is on SoundCloud. And if you have any questions that you don't want to leave on social media, fine with us. Email us, SollySteveOnSports@gmail.com. For everybody working hard behind the scenes, and for Jeff, I'm Solly. We'll be back same time, same place next week. See ya!
When I'm sad, she comes to me with a thousand smiles.